Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It's your boy Limes here with another episode of Terror with a Twist of Limes. And we have a very special show for you tonight. But before I get to that, I would just like to introduce you to everybody that's almost everybody that's on the show tonight. First of all, I have my moral center and regular co-host with me, Amy. Amy, why don't you say hello to the audience?
Hello, everyone.
Oh, wow. Also on the show tonight, we have the head of the Deviant Legion and my personal mentor, Mr. Carl Kafer. But Carl, say hi to the audience, please.
You know, I can't be your personal mentor because you're so goddamn better than I am.
Oh, shut up. Come on. That's not good. That's not good.
Hello, everyone.
Come on, that's not good. And also, last but by no means least in any way, shape, or form, we have Adam with us. And Adam has his own show, Cathobre, where Adam focuses on, whereas I generally focus on sort of the movie side of the sci-fi horror genre, Adam kind of focuses on the TV side and, you know, sometimes the twain doth meet. But our guest tonight is Dee Wallace. Dee, who you probably know from her impressive
movie career. Now, here she is, by the way.
Yeah.
Here she is.
Well, you know what? Let's pause that for a second. We'll get to that in a second. No, you know what? Why don't we carry on with that for a second? So Dee is with us right now. Before we say hi to Dee, I just want to say, look, you know, everybody knows this lady's movie career. You know, it basically reads like a greatest hits. It's fantastic. You know, The Stepford Wives, The Hills Have Eyes, The Howling, E.T., The Extraterrestrial, Cujo, Critters. And while obviously, you know, I obviously focus on the horror side of things, Dee's career is so much wider and so much broader than that, and I would like very much to welcome to the show tonight, Ms. Dee Wallace. Dee, how are you?
Hi, did I wake you up and get you all excited?
Scared the heck out of me.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. I had a slight emergency at home that
not
I had
problem.
To take care of, and I couldn't get here at 5 of, but here I am.
Oh,
yay!
Fantastic. Dee, before we you know, we get into the meat and potatoes of this interview, I just want to introduce you to Carl. He's the head of Deviant Legion. We've got Amy, my co-host here, and we have Adam, who has his own show, Cathobre. Guys, why don't you say a united hello to Dee?
Hello there.
Hi, Dee.
Hello, Dee.
Hey, we're having a party.
Absolutely.
There you go.
And I brought the beer and pretzels, so we're all good.
Good. I'm glad, guys.
You brought the cheese, Carl.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I brought the cheese. Absolutely.
Dee, so, you know, obviously, you know, for the sake of context, you know, I kind of started out there talking about your movie career because that's obviously the first side that everyone, you know, kind of knows. What some people may not know, what really fascinates me and what really I'm so excited to have you on the show tonight. I've been doing these interviews. It's been Women in Horror Month. You know, they've been very empowering. And I'm really intrigued that you're doing absolutely awesome work in the field of healing and self-empowerment, which is absolutely, you know, it's critical to everybody. Could you talk to us a bit about that, about what you're doing in that field there?
Well, I've been doing it for now almost 40 years. And
wow.
Okay. I'm a clairaudient channel.
Mm-hmm.
I hear messages. A lot of times I see pictures. And
okay.
My forte is being able to kind of look into people's energy and find out where their blocks are.
Okay.
And I can tell everybody that our blocks are all coming from within us, not from outside, not from, you know, some dark forces that are out there. Basically, everything's energy. You learned that in fifth grade. And energy has to have direction. But most of us are not directing it consciously. Most of us are allowing our incorrect belief systems or our old religious beliefs or our fears from our families, etc. And mm-hmm. we keep thinking those thoughts and feeling those feelings that we had when we were children. And that's what keeps creating our lives today. And until we choose to replace and reprogram our brains to think in a more positive, lucrative, healthy, expansive way, then things don't change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's really, at this point in my life, it's really interesting to hear this because I got to tell you, you know, people would talk to me for a long, long time about, you know, the power of positive thinking and the laws of attraction and such. And, you know, there was a period in my life where I kind of went through that, oh, you know, is this real? Is it? And what I've felt and seen in the last little while, 100%, it's incredible when you open up that positive side. I want to ask, is there some particular catalyst that sort of put you on this path when you say like 40 years ago there?
Yeah, if I had to pick one thing, I think it would be the death of my husband. Although I've been channeling, I didn't call it that, of course, since I was a very little girl, which most kids do, by the way. You know,
yeah.
Channeling is just being open to hearing all the information that's all mm-hmm. hanging out right above our heads. So there's nothing terribly woo-woo or, oh, my God, I earned the right to do this kind of thing. It's just, are you willing?
Mm-hmm.
And are you open? And can you create enough trust in yourself? But when my husband died of a heart attack, I dropped to my knees and I said to God, I don't want to be pissed off. I don't want to be a victim. I want a way we can heal ourselves. And
yeah.
Within seconds, the first message came in, which was use the light within you to heal yourself. Well, I didn't know what the hell that meant. I mean, I sort of kind of had heard people talking about your inner light and, you know, because I was raised in a religious Methodist household, and so I was had done some spiritual work and studied really a precursor to The Secret called conceptology. But I really am still learning the power of what those words mean. And basically, if you want to change your life, guys, the first step is you have to know you have all the power.
Yeah.
We're given
yeah.
free will,
mm-hmm.
and we're given free will to choose.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us, in one way or another, had a teaching that taught us that we are not that power, that we're going to be stricken down if we think we're that power. You know, that God isn't going to love us and blah, 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 and all that limiting stuff that man teaches that God never taught.
Mm-hmm.
God said, hey, these miracles and more you're going to do too. Go do them. You know?
Yeah.
And then man
yeah.
went, oh, my God, we can't let them know they have that much power. We better tell them that they're not worthy. So we'll have all the power. So the kings and the popes and everybody got in bed together, and that's my understanding of it. And here we are.
Yeah.
People are waking up now. A lot of people are waking up.
Yeah. It's definitely a historic time we're going through at the moment. And just as a brief, I just wanted to, you know, obviously, you know, for you obviously spoke of your husband there, the late Christopher Stone. I just want to say on my own, from my own person, what a wonderful actor he was also. Honestly, I will tell you this. This will be my 30-second moment. There's one scene. I was a big fan of the TV show Airwolf when it used to be on, and he was in an episode there with Jan Michael Vincent where they were the kind of ex-friends turned nemesis. And the final scene where Chris Stone's taking down the helicopter and he screams at Jan Michael Vincent, "I know where your brother is. I know where Sinjin is." I'm sitting here now. I just come out in goose flesh. Just saying that right now. Loved it.
Yeah, he was a pretty powerful actor. And you know what's so funny is he mostly played bad guys, and he was the sweetest, softest, most sensitive guy you could ever hope to meet.
Wow. Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. We spoke about, obviously, the time that we're in at the moment, and it is a strange time. The pandemic, it's really taken a heavy psychological toll on people. I'm curious to hear what's been your sort of unique way of helping people that have come to you, you know, as looking for counsel and stuff. What's been your unique way of helping people through these times?
Well, first of all, if you think that anything outside of you can take you down, you're going to be a victim right there. And energetically, the channel says the energetic meaning and cause behind COVID is I have no control, which is, of course, what it has plunged people into feeling, like they have no control. But
right. But
the belief and the feeling that they had no control was what opened up the possibility for this virus to emerge. Mm-hmm. So I tell everybody, here's COVID, and we're in quarantine. Those are the parameters that you get to create within now. So get up every day and go, okay, what can I create today? Within these parameters, what can I create? What can I do? The more you focus on, oh my God, it's taking all of my power from me, it's taking my choice from me, the less power and choice you have.
Right.
And
yeah.
You've just got to keep creating who you are and the life you're living. And I'm telling you, because when it hit, I went, oh my God, how am I going to make a living? I'm an actor, and they're closing all the studios.
Yeah, right.
And the channel said, Dee, the studios aren't your livelihood, you are. So every day I just got up, and I have a 10-minute exercise, which if you want me to, I can share with everybody. It's literally life-changing.
Please
and,
do.
I started doing that every day that the channel gave me, and I had one of the best years I've ever had financially, and things, you guys, you would not believe some of the places that money just dropped in. It just found me. A movie that wanted to use a clip of me from Cujo, and we had started talking to them over 2 years ago. And as soon as the pandemic hit, like 3 weeks into it, they said, oh, by the way, we want to use your clip. Here's $75,000. No,
wow.
$7,500, sorry. And, but I mean, that's how it works unless you give up your power of creating it.
Wow.
If I can interrupt here for just a moment.
Please do, Carl. Go ahead.
It's funny you say that because, you know, when the pandemic hit, it gave me the ability to really start working on the network. Limes came in and things have just gone through the roof. And,
exactly.
and everybody involved in it, Adam and of course Amy is a co-host, but everyone has pitched in, and so this is our focus. And you're absolutely right. You have to have a focus to get through something like this. Otherwise, you end up in a corner like a quivering pile of
yeah.
dirt.
Yeah, and you go, I can't create anymore because this has happened. Guys, there's nothing wrong with the stories of our life except we keep frickin' telling them. We keep telling them over and over and over. Well, that is a direction to energy. So you go, all right, for example, me. You know, I'm the daughter of an alcoholic, and I come from a really poor family, and everybody took advantage of my dad, and that's who I am. Well, that's a true statement that happened to me in my life. Who I am now, my mom and dad aren't going to change that. I'm the only one that can change that.
Yeah.
So that's not... That's the story of my childhood, but that is not the story of who I am. Today, I am a successful healer and a successful actress and a producer and a director, and I love my life, and I'm healthy, and I create a lot of money. That's who I am while I'm serving and helping and enlightening people on the planet. I mean, how much more do you want?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And
but I had to say that I was that person before I could be that person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And speaking about creating and things that you talk about the positive energy that you've channeled, the focus through the pandemic. I know you had a work that you I know Amy wanted to ask you about a work that you worked on during the pandemic, right, Amy?
Yes, actually.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, Dee. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
You too. So
a few months back, I watched a little short film you did called Stay Home.
Oh, yes.
And
did
I thought
like
it was just so fun. Yes, I thought it was so fun and clever.
Thank you.
And I was just wondering how that came about. Was that something I know you're
well,
an executive
producer?
Well,
it came about because I got up one day and I went, I don't know what to do today. What can I create today? And the first thing I heard was, why don't you do a film? And I went, wait, what? Why don't you do a film? And I went, well, I don't even know where to start. And the channel said, why don't you start with your daughter? She's a director.
Wow.
So
wow.
I called her and I said, look, I've got this idea to do a really short horror film as a gift to all the fans out there. And I want to do a take on Stay Home. Oh, you're safer if you stay home. Right. Well, nobody in my film is safer if they stay home. Right.
Very true.
She and her friend Chris got together and wrote this great script. And I called a bunch of my horror buddies, Barbara Crampton and Kane Hodder and Danielle Harris and Scout Taylor Compton. They all said, we're in, Dee. I said, look. You have to do it in your own home because we're all going to do it COVID compliant. So we literally, Gabrielle directed them via Zoom and FaceTime.
Wow.
And we shipped cameras back and forth. We did almost all of it on this little GoPro thing. I mean, it was amazing how it all came together. And and I love it, and it's just gotten some really great reviews, and we're hoping maybe to turn it into a feature now.
Oh, that would be
nice.
Amazing. I'd be first in line to see that. I thought it was great, and it was really helpful during the pandemic to see, you know, how things can still be done, you know, movies
yeah,
can still be
thank
made.
You.
And yeah, it was great.
Thank you.
I gotta watch this. Amy, can you get me the link after the show? I want to watch this. I gotta see it.
Yep, absolutely.
See, you mentioned obviously horror, and it's no secret to anyone that you've done a lot of great horror movies. But I'm seeing I want to ask you because I'm seeing this with the channeling. And obviously you've done so many great movies, but you do have a knack for horror and sci-fi. It's almost like you throw the dart at the bolt and you always hit the bullseye. What? How do you do that?
Well, first of all, God bless you and thank you for saying that. You know, I really owe everything to my mentor, Charles Conrad. He was my last acting teacher that I found. And when I found his technique, I was home. And it's all based on getting your energy very, very, very high and not working on the script, not breaking down the script. But what you do, for want of a better word, is you literally end up channeling the character. So it takes all of the fear of, quote, making the wrong decision out of it. You know, you just live in the moment. And if a director gives me a direction where it doesn't jive with my character and what I know is driving her, the only way I can explain it is I feel like I get bugs all over me.
Really?
You know? So my greatest challenge in Cujo was making sure that everything, every moment was real. Because in movies like that, you want to go overboard, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just, my job was to get my energy really, really high and stay in the moment, just to always stay in the moment. And magical things happen. Almost every big film I've ever done, moments have happened and the director will see them and they'll literally stop and bring the camera back. Or Mr. Spielberg, even when I got up from the dinner table scene, because I remember thinking, oh, I don't want the kids to see me cry. And that wasn't in the script. And he said, Dee, why did you get up? What happened? And I explained it to him. And in that moment, he had the guys come in and build a kitchen set with running water so they could take me over to the sink.
Oh,
and then come
right.
back in that big close-up where I say he hates Mexico.
Oh,
that all
right.
happened.
Okay.
Yeah, that all happened in like 30 minutes.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's the magic when everybody works together on a set and everybody trusts each other. That's the magic.
Yeah.
That can happen. It happened with Peter Jackson. I mean, my God, it happens all the time with Rob Zombie. Rob is just, you know, he's just a free lark. He's just open. I love working with Rob. And Joe Dante, for example, on The Howling.
Oh.
We were on the ranch. It was the last night we were on the ranch. And we had to get this shot outside the barn.
Mm-hmm.
And our generators all blew. So we had no power. So you know what he and John Hora had all of us pull our cars up and turn our headlights on, and that's how we lit that scene.
Oh, excellent.
See, what can I create? These are my limitations. What can I create anyway? Right?
Yeah. If I can interrupt for a moment.
Go for it, Carl. Go for it.
Okay, so one of the things you just said, I do a podcast in with ISF, and we talked to specifically more micro-budget people and things like that. And what you're saying, you know, happens all the time with people with no budget. You always find a way to do things. And the one thing about something like that, you get a problem like the generator goes out or you don't have a budget, you find a way to get it done. And
well,
that's the true genius of film, that you find a way to do
not
it.
Not only the genius, but it's the fun. It's,
yeah.
Oh,
it's the
yeah.
creativity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times, um, hold on. Can you close the door? Thank you. A lot of times we become more creative, like shooting Stay Home on a little GoPro camera.
Yeah,
great.
You know?
Great.
And it's got a really great look. It's got an alive look to it in the moment. And you makes you feel like you're there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot to be said. I mean, obviously you can be terribly creative with millions and millions and millions of dollars too.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all actually, I think everyone that's on this show here, Dee, I think a lot of us agree that we love, low budget does seems to be where the magic happens, where the imagination really kicks in, like you said. But you spoke about fun. What would you say, out of all the movies you've done there, what was the one you had the absolute most fun on? What was the most positive experience?
Oh, gosh. It would be a toss-up between The Howling and 10.
Doubly more 10, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Ray.
I mean, I thought I died and gone to heaven. First of all, it was Blake Edwards, who I adored. And
yeah.
He took us all to Las Hadas, Mexico. We all stayed in marble suites. You know, I mean, I often say I started with the best of the best. You know,
yeah.
And then I kind of had to adapt to everybody else. And then, of course, The Howling was pretty low budget for what we did, guys. You know, I think we had a little over $1 million. Werewolf in London had 10. But I was working with my fiancé. And so,
yeah. You
know, I was on the set having a love affair at the same time I was shooting a film. And we had a great time together, and everybody on there was like a big family. And you can't work with Joe Dante and not have fun. I mean, Joe just... is fun, you know. Cujo is my favorite film, but sure not to film. Hardest thing I ever did.
Cujo seems to just, I mean, I was a single parent there for 10 years, raising two boys on my own. And when I watched Cujo as a teenager, you know, it was, the rabid dog, scary, the rabid dog. But when I watched it again as an adult and having kids, it's that fear, take the dog out of it. And the dog's just, it's kind of a MacGuffin. It's just that terror of being in a situation where you can't, you're trying to save it. And you just, oh my God, you killed it. It's so
thank
frightening.
You. It just about killed me.
What was your experience with the little fellow there that you were working with?
Danny
Pintaro. In that film?
Oh,
yeah.
Danny, I got up every morning and thank God I got that kid. He was like working with another adult. He was amazing. Absolutely amazing. You know, he just had perfect instincts. Perfect timing, emotional life. It was, dear God, I can only imagine if I'd gotten some of the other kids that I've worked with over my career. Certainly not E.T. Everybody in E.T. was brilliant. All the kids. I've been lucky. I've, you know, they say never work with kids and dogs. Well, I wouldn't have had a career. <You know? laughs>
I never even thought about that. That's amazing. Oh, my goodness. So you mentioned E.T. there, Dee, because, I mean, obviously it takes up the room, right? It's such an iconic film. I know, Adam, you had a question for Dee about E.T. Do you want to hit that one?
Yeah, I think the best way to put it is I'm prepping a show for a couple weeks from now on Spielberg, and I've been going over some of the movies that he did. And back-to-back, I did E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and there were moments in those, because it's been quite a few years since I've seen either of them, where I said, this really feels like a horror film, and that probably shouldn't surprise me too much, being that Spielberg's been so involved with other horror films as a producer in his career. But given your career in horror films, did you ever get the feeling working with Spielberg that maybe if he'd wanted to just go to one genre, that he could have found huge success just as a horror director?
Well, I think Steven could do anything. So, yes. But if you can do anything, why choose to do one thing? That's like me saying I would never want to do the beautiful family Christmas films that I do every year because I do horror films.
Yeah.
You know, or I just finished 911, an arc on 911. I think actors and producers and creatives, they want to explore all their creativity. And I also, back to your point, I want to make sure that we understand that suspense films and horror films oftentimes feel the same, but a horror film has definite different aspects to it than a suspense film, even though a suspense film can seem very frightening to you while
right.
you're experiencing that ride. And then there's slasher films. A slasher film is not a horror film.
No.
And that's what we've had for so long. Meet our five characters and watch how brutally we can murder them. That's not a horror film. A horror film is a film where you take time to develop the characters and you take time to be invested in the characters in the story so that you go along on the horrific ride when the rabid dog breaks through, you know, the window at the end of Cujo, which, by the way, we could not get a dog to do that. And those dogs, let me tell you, Carl Miller had trained those dogs so magnificently, but he couldn't get one of the St. Bernards to do it. So we had a couple of black, I think maybe they were Dobermans or some kind of big dog, and we had dog suits for them. We couldn't get them to do it. We had the stunt guy in the dog suit go through it. It looked stupid. Finally, Carl came and he said, look, I've got one dog that I think will do this. You have one shot. We're not doing more than one take. It's too traumatic for the dog. I mean, he kept such good care of those dogs, he even slept with them in the barn. And so we got three cameras and got that amazing shot of that dog coming through, which is so worth all the trouble they went through to get it. But in total, with everybody and all the dogs, there were 13 dogs that played Cujo.
Wow.
Yeah, they were all trained to go after different toys for different tricks. Like one was a barker, and one was a digger, and one was a growler, and one was a runner, and one was a jumper, and you know, and so we had toys, and they'd call action, and Carl would show the dog his toy, and then put it behind us or wherever, and he'd go dig for your toy, and then the dog would go into action. But they were so well trained that as soon as he gave the command, man, they just stopped in their tracks. So nobody was ever really frightened that we were going to be scared of the dog, except the one scene where the dog crawls on top of me, right, after I hit him with the bat. And so we have a doggy medic there, and they sedate the dog, but they don't put him out. So I've got this 150-pound dog on top of me going, right? And then Louis Ting, our director, goes, all right, D, can you grab him and push him up and down like you're trying to get him off you? So I'm bench pressing, right, this 150-pound dog that's not all the way out. I mean, it was a little freaky for me.
Oh, my goodness.
Body by Cujo.
What?
Yeah. Body by Cujo.
Yeah. Body by Cujo. Yeah, exactly. Biceps by Cujo. Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, like the power of suggestion and how slashers are not horror. And I couldn't agree more. The Howling, that's absolutely top five for me in terms of all-time favorite horror movies. And I've got to tell you, when I initially saw, you talk about suggestion, when I initially saw the TV spots as a kid in the UK, growing up in the UK, they never showed the werewolves. But what stuck with me, you'd hear the howling noise, you'd hear this kind of slashing kind of noise, but they always zeroed in on that shot of you just before you transfer, when you've got like kind of the gold contacts or whatever that is in your eyes there. And you do that kind of where you cock your head to the side and scream.
Yeah.
D, that utterly terrified the hell out of me as a kid.
Oh, goody.
And I've always wanted to ask you, what when you talk about the channeling and you talk about the feeling of the bugs on your body, what was going through your mind? Because you really look like you're transforming into an otherworldly creature. What were you thinking at that point?
Well, I don't think when I act. That's the whole point. I don't think. But Joe said, you know, Dee, just do a little scream and we'll lay it in. We'll lay a scream in afterwards. And I looked at him and he said, well, give me a shot at it. Come on, give me a shot at. And I don't know, it just came from the most frightened, demonic place in me that I had, and that's the scream they used. They used my real scream. I think they echo it, you know. But the more I think, the worse my acting gets. I just have to be in the moment. I just literally have to be in the moment of the character.
Mm-hmm.
And Louis T.
By the way. By the way, I must say that there's no doubt about it. You are the cutest werewolf ever on film.
I know. My little Bambi werewolf. Huh? Well, how that came about was I have it in my contract never to be seen as a werewolf. I guess it was important back then that the star of the film didn't do shit like that. So Joe called me and said, Dee, you know, we just screened it and all the cards come back and they want to see you as a werewolf. But, you know, we need your permission because it's in your contract. I said, I don't care, Joe. But can you make her a little different because she's fought so hard against this? And so they came up with this little Bambi werewolf. And that's not me. That's an animatronic. I was shooting Cujo when they did that.
Wow. Oh, my God. Oh, great. Okay, that makes sense. You always think in terms of when a movie's released, but yeah, right. Okay, you would have been shooting that at that point. Wow. That's interesting. We're kind of sort of slowly moving toward time here, so I don't want to keep you too long. I do want to ask you, I know a couple of questions. What do you consider your proudest moment in your career, Dee? What was the proudest moment?
Having my daughter.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't have to think about that. I tried for 6 years. I had every specialist in L.A. told me I'd never get pregnant. Now, that's the power of thought, guys. I said, thank you very much. God and I have a different plan. I'm having this kid. It's going to be a girl. I could see her. It took me 6 years, and, you know, we have this running joke. She said, yeah, Mom, there were like millions of souls up there. And I finally said, all right, I'll go. She's not going to give up. And,
incredible.
Yeah,
incredible.
And now, of course, she's my best friend. We work together a lot. She has, by the way, a best-selling book called Eat, Pray, #FML. That is helping millions and millions of people across the world heal from broken relationships and assholes that have done horrible things to them. And so if you're one of those and you want some help really regaining your power back, notice I am hawking her book, not mine.
By the way, you should hawk your own book. You should hawk your own book. That's part of the deal.
Mine's called Bright Light. I also have one that I love called Conscious Creation. But Bright Light is a story, kind of an autobiography, actually, guys, of all the big directors and big films that I've done with and all the spiritual lessons I've learned along the way. All available on Amazon. Thank you.
There you go.
There you go. What's do you still have? Because I mean, obviously, you're still very, you know, your acting career is still. The last I really enjoyed was seeing you in House of the Devil, Ty West, because that was such a fantastic film.
Oh my God, you're way behind.
I know I'm behind. Yeah. I'm always behind, but I love that. But I did love that one. That's because it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. He's very talented.
Do you have like a bucket list role that you haven't done yet that you're kind of like, you know what, I want to do that?
Speaking of Ty, he asked me and I said I always wanted to play a nun, so he hired somebody else to do it. I have always wanted to play a conflicted nun that is really searching for the truth of not only her faith, but what the truth is. Mm-hmm. Always wanted to, from the time I was in high school. So,
is there
somebody
a specific
write me
reason
that.
For that?
What?
Is there a specific reason for that?
I'm just called to it. I'm just called
You're
to
just
do
called.
It. You know, I've just always been. I think because now of my healing work, especially, I work with so many people that think they understand the law of attraction and they think they understand creating their own lives, but they don't. They don't get it. And you can study it, you can read it, you can go to classes, but if you don't live it 24/7, guys, your life isn't going to change. Just not.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to live consciously, period.
Yeah. Yeah. Final question, Dee, because I know we're at time now.
Yeah,
and that
thank
is,
you.
With these women in horror, interviews I've done, they've been very empowering for a lot of young women that are listening that are looking to move into the industry themselves. What final piece of advice would you give to a young woman that's listening to this with that idea of going from watching the movies to becoming a creator or an actress?
Well, I have two. Number one, don't think you have to be a sexual toy to be in this business. Many horror films use young women as sexual bait in the movies. you can play that part. You don't have to be that part in real life. And the second thing is be yourself. Every actor, you know, I taught acting for almost 40 years out here. And every actor thinks you have to go in and be something else, that they're looking for something else. They're not. They're looking for you. They're looking for your uniqueness.
Yeah.
To bring to the part. And that's what will make you stand out. When I first got out here, I met with a manager and he said, you know, I think about representing you, but you have to lose your Kansas accent and you have to get your breasts done.
Oh, goodness.
I looked at him and I said, you know what, I'm not going to play those kind of parts. That's not what I sell.
Yeah.
So then I went to Mr. Easton, the top coach at the time out here, dialect coach, and he said, Dee, if you lose that accent, you're crazy. Just lengthen your A's a little bit. That's all you have to do. But that accent's going to get you jobs. And he was right. So find who you are and find where your power is. And most of all, find where your truthfulness is. Because that's
amazing.
What they want.
Amazing, amazing. Dee Wallace, thank you very much for joining us tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure, and come back anytime. This has been amazing. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, guys, and I hope I didn't scare the bejesus out of you.
Well, before you go, let me just say that Limes was hyperventilated just a little bit.
Don't blame him. And that's not my MO. Just know that what was going on here, it was not my fault. I did the best I could, but we had a great 45 minutes together. So
love it. Thank you.
Bye, guys. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye. Thank you very much, Steve.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Carl, over to you for your wrap-up of the evening. What's coming up on Deviant Legion soon?
Okay, so what we've got coming up is, so today is Monday. Tuesday we are off. But Wednesday, Rachel is going down the rabbit hole once more, and we're doing part two of comedy and music. And we're going to be dealing with a nice playlist on that. We'll have that on Wednesday. On Thursday, God help us, please, the God of internet, we will have Tim Ritter back for a third time, and hopefully this time he'll be able to get into friggin' Blog Talk, okay? So we're going to be doing that. And on Saturday, I can tell you that we will be doing another commentary watch with Scrudge, and that should be fun. I think we're going to do the Cane Toad documentary, and hopefully we'll get Joe Badon on for that. And then next Tuesday, I will be doing special Carl's Cavern, and we'll be doing The Muppet Show, because The Muppet Show is now on Disney+, and I just went through seasons 4 and 5, and we're going to be talking about the guest stars and what made The Muppet Show so special, and all these things that we can revisit now thanks to Disney+. So that's what we've got so far.
Amazing. Okay, good stuff. What about you? What's coming up with you, Adam?
Well, I have two things coming up, and possibly three. The things that are set in stone, on the 12th, I have my Steven Spielberg episode, which, of course, will also cover his TV work. 2 weeks after that, but on a Saturday, so it'll actually be, what will that be, the 27th instead of the 26th, I will be doing an episode on the Danish drama Borgen. But in the meantime, I'm trying to, if I can get the guests lined up, either this week or on the 19th, I am going to do an episode on a miniseries. Again, I hate to leave it up in the air, but it will all be about the guests. I have a couple of guests that are firming up their schedules, and I've always said that my show is very, very guest-friendly, and the guests and audience kind of dictate the show, so availability will dictate which miniseries gets slotted in as an unexpected extra episode this month. But I will say that it will be a landmark British miniseries, no matter which way we splice it.
Beauty, beauty. Amy.
Carl.
Yeah.
Adam. All three of you. What a wonderful show that was tonight. I am so ecstatic. I'm beaming from ear to ear. I've enjoyed all of these. I've really enjoyed this Women in Horror Month. I've enjoyed all of these interviews. You know, like, thank you to Dee for being on the show tonight. Thank you to Stacey Nelkin, to Emma Dirk, to Tara Price, everyone, to Debbie Rashawn, everyone that's been involved. It's really been absolutely amazing. You got any ideas for upcoming shows, Amy? Anything in particular you'd like to tackle moving down the road?
Oh, sure. There's a bunch of things I'd like to cover.
Yeah?
I think we should do a show on the Phantasm series.
Right. Amazing. Yep.
Oh, I'm in.
I'd be up
I'm
for
in.
That.
Yeah.
I'm
ready to fight or not about these.
Can I also say that I am a huge fan of Coscarelli in general as a director because, hey, I'm also a big fan of Beastmaster and Bubba Hotep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Bubba Hotep. He's
great. Yeah, we can do a whole show on Coscarelli and all his movies for all I care. I'm a big fan, too. So, but yeah,
has anybody read his book? His book is delightful.
Yes, it is. I went to, I saw him and he opened, he did a little Q&A before a Phantasm screening at the Alamo, and I got his book then. It's really good.
Sweet.
Nice.
Amazing. Good stuff. Well, guys, if you don't mind, I am ready to drink a glass of wine and come down from outer space. I want to wish all of our listeners a very good night. Thank you for tuning in. And be back in 2 weeks for more Terror with a Twist of Limes. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night. Okay, good night, everyone.
Night, guys.
Thanks a lot. Good night.